This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good evening, it's the evening edition. You're with Caroline and Ezra. Now, we're going to be covering a topic that doesn't seem to get much real estate in the media. The topic of inclusive education, specifically education for children with learning disabilities. Now, while primary level education has been compulsory for every Malaysian child since 2003, considering the facilities provided by the Ministry of Education, it would appear that not all children are created equal, or at least have equal opportunities. Joining us to explore the topic this evening is UNICEF's representative to Malaysia, Ms. Wavina Belmonte. Welcome and thanks for coming in.
Nice to be back at BFM. Thanks.
Now, I guess to kick things off, we know, about inclusive education is education for children with disabilities, but what sort of disabilities are we referring to?
All kinds, really. Physical, intellectual as well. Kids who are normally not mainstream kids in school. And what we're talking about are the kinds of facilities that are available to them or not available to them. Sometimes they're not going to school at all. Sometimes they're going to schools that are specifically designed for children with that disability, whether that means physical or intellectual. Sometimes they're in mainstream schools. And when we use the term inclusive education, that's what we're talking about. Kids with disabilities who are in mainstream schools.
Okay, so what type of education are we talking about? Are we talking about a different curriculum, for example, different style of learning?
No, we're actually quite the opposite. It's whatever a mainstream child would be studying, so would the child with a disability. There might be technical equipment to help them keep up with, or just to be able to read, mm-hmm. so a computer that allows Braille, for example, or sometimes it's really simple geography of the classroom. If it's an auditory thing, mm-hmm. have them up front. If it's a visual, someone who is not completely visual, not blind totally, but functional blindness, have them sit in a certain part of the room. They don't have to have a different kind of curriculum. They just need a bit more care.
Perhaps you can elaborate for us why inclusive education is important.
Well, I guess if we take it out of the classroom for just a moment and think about children and adults who are left on the margins of society, when we talk about an inclusive society, it's about making sure that people are brought in. And this is the educational equivalent of that idea. You know, just because a child has a disability doesn't mean that child should be marginalized and left out. And one of the really interesting things that we've seen in countries and in areas and sometimes in Malaysia as well, when inclusive education takes place, there's a resistance at the beginning because parents sometimes feel like, oh my goodness, you're going to put those kids with mine and it's going to dumb down the class.
Right.
And yet, the evidence shows that there's actually a win-win. And that's the inclusive side.
What evidence and what are the results from it?
Well, what we find in schools that have inclusive education is that mainstream kids learn about what it's like for a child with a disability to adapt, to sometimes conquer what it is that they're facing in terms of the disability. And it actually helps them too in terms of their outlook. Sometimes they mentor kids, sometimes they turn into sort of teacher's help with these kids, and it helps them and their marks. So it's a win for the child with a disability, and it's a win for the mainstream child as
right.
well.
I guess just to provide some backstory, how long has it been since we introduced inclusive education?
So inclusive education has existed for several years here. Something significant happened last year in terms of the Ministry of Education and how they slot kids. The previous Education Act talked about educable and uneducable children. And that has shifted, that language has shifted, which is important because it's more than semantics. It's also a shift in understanding that all kids are educable. It's just figuring out, does the teacher know how to handle a child like this in the classroom? Do you have something as basic as a ramp at a school? If what we're talking about is a child who's in a wheelchair, for example.
Fantastic. We're going to be back after this speaking about education for children with disabilities, or the greater topic of inclusive education. With us is Ms. Wavina Belmonte, the UNICEF representative of Malaysia. Stay tuned to the evening edition on BFM 89.9. It's the evening edition. You're with Caroline and Ezra. We're speaking to Ms. Wavina Belmonte, UNICEF representative of Malaysia, about inclusive education. And we're speaking before, I guess, about the backstory of inclusive education, how long it's been since we introduced it here in Malaysia. And of course, you know, a lot of folks are saying, you know, isn't it easier, you know, for children with special needs to be taught, you know, in an environment where it's more conducive to that? What is the argument against that?
Well, some argue very strongly for that, as you say, and there are schools that do just that in Malaysia. In Malaysia, there are three kinds of schools. There's the special education schools, mm-hmm. which divides kids up in exactly as you've said. They clump the kids together according to the special needs. Mm-hmm. There are special education integrated programs, which is kids in mainstream schools that have sort of separate classrooms and targeted, focused classes for kids with disabilities, whatever the disability may be.
But they're still within the same environment, I guess?
They're in the same school, but in different classes. Mm-hmm. And then there's the inclusive education program, where it's all for one and one for all.
Mm. Right. So is there a favorite or the best amongst the three that you listed?
Well, let's start with the simple things. It's great that kids with disabilities are getting education. That's a given.
Right.
And preferably that they're getting a quality education, yeah. where in whatever kind of school. The sort of global thinking on this right now is that inclusive education is the best option because it helps. It gives you that win-win that I was mentioning earlier. Mm. It helps young people who have the disabilities adapt in a functioning environment.
Right.
But it also helps young people who are able-bodied to live in a classroom, in a day-to-day experience where they meet these kids, they talk to these kids, the sort of, you know, one of the biggest problems with children with disabilities is the kind of stigma and marginalization factor. That's true as children, it's true when they become adults. And part of what inclusive education allows is that it demystifies this, well, you know,
almost what's desensitization approach, if you will.
Well, it sensitizes.
Right.
Yeah, okay. Exactly. So whereas normally when you see a child with a disability, we will focus on the cane, the white cane, if they're visually impaired, or the wheelchair, if they're physically impaired. It's about seeing the child rather than the disability.
Right.
And so what are some of the challenges when we're talking about inclusive education? I'm just trying to imagine what it's like in the environment of classroom, notwithstanding the things you mentioned, like the ramp. Once we're in the classroom and the teacher has begun teaching, what is that process like when you have kids who have special needs and those who are those who don't have any disabilities?
Well, once we've got, let's say we've got the child in the classroom, all is well on that count, then it becomes, is the teacher comfortable? And to the extent that there has to be some kind of special attention, does the teacher have the capacity? Does the teacher know how to do that?
Is that the situation here? Do we have teachers who have the capacity, the required training, and so on?
It's a good question. Even the Ministry of Education says that that's one of the things that they need to improve. And in fact, in the educational blueprint, which I know you've talked about in previous shows,
yes.
It's a small part of the education blueprint.
Small part, but effective enough?
Proof is in the pudding.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Right.
Sometimes you need to have an additional teacher or support in the classroom, maybe not a teacher per se. So the Ministry of Education acknowledges that. There's sometimes the need for special equipment, whether it's a computer screen or something like that. But that would be true if they're in a special school, too.
Mm-hmm.
So there's, you know, if you're going to argue, oh, well, you know, this costs money, if you're going to invest in their education,
you're going to be investing
anyway,
in it anyway. Yeah.
It's just where you put it. So those are the kinds of things that you start dealing with right when you're in the classroom.
So teachers is one of them?
Yeah. Teachers, the equipment, the lack of uniformity of access to education services. So in some places, we're not even there yet. Like there are sort of, if we drew the map across Malaysia, in places like in Sabah and Sarawak and certain places, and even in peninsular Malaysia, where there are other services that are missing, this is going to be missing too. I mean, in UNICEF terms, we talk about multiple deprivation. That's a not very user-friendly term, but it means that where you've already got sort of deficiencies, where services are already lacking, this is just one more of those.
Now, you know, you mentioned something about the cost a little earlier, and yes, you know, it would cost a lot of money no matter how you do it. But in terms of just short-term solutions for now, I mean, is there anything that can be done?
Short-term solutions for now is shifting from saying that inclusive education is important and doing inclusive education. And that means, yes, teacher training, yes to the physical things around the school, the structures, and yes to making sure that some of the technical services are in place. You know, if the commitment is really there, those are not the big hurdles. The big hurdle is actually the commitment in the first place and then implementing it.
Well, Rina, in 2010, the Education Ministry estimated there are around 200,000 students with disabilities in the primary school education had gone unidentified, while some 23,000 children with disabilities were out of school. Why do you think this is happening?
Well, I think that there are several reasons for that. One is one is actually sometimes the parents also are resistant sending their kids to school. They worry about the children being teased. They worry about their own children being able to keep up. And there's that kind of, hang on, where am I going to put my child? I know I want them to have an education. There are NGOs that offer classrooms. And so there's like an informal parallel education system. So that's where some of them are going. Mm. So it's figuring out how do you go from this idea of, you know, it's really the integration of young people
and that
is,
seems to
is
be
a
the,
good thing.
And that seems to be the toughest part because a lot of folks are opting out of the mainstream system and looking at all these parallel systems.
Well, I could give you a great example that we saw happen in another country. So not in this region, a country called Montenegro, which was part of the former Yugoslavia. There you had sort of a really radical example of parents saying, do not let children with disabilities close to my kids. I mean, really radically aggressive behavior around that. And so there were a wide range of communities where they said to the boards of education, not in my school. And UNICEF and others sort of took this up and started mounting the argument of why it's important. And as I said, the proof was in the pudding. It's a ridiculous maybe sort of saying, but it was also effective in that case because they started with a pilot school to prove that this was a win-win. And within one school year, they drastically changed not only the parents' opinions, but the students' opinions. Because the students, too, they were modeling what the parents were saying. It's like, I don't want to be in a class with somebody who's in a wheelchair, or I don't want to be in a class with somebody who's going to slow me down. And in fact, what they saw was, you know what? That kid's really smart, and I learned from that kid. And in Montenegro, there's been like a sea change within one school year. That's not when you do the kind of work that we do, we never expect that sort of result so quickly. That's almost like the kind of thing you want to replicate.
Absolutely, that's a great example. We're going to be focusing on UNICEF and their role with children and disabilities in Malaysia. We're speaking with Ms. Wavina Belmonte about inclusive education. We'll be back after the 7 o'clock news. This is the evening edition on BFM 89.9. Good evening, I'm Ezra Zaid.
Good evening, I'm Caroline Oh.
And we're with Ms. Wavina Belmonte, UNICEF representative of Malaysia, speaking about inclusive education. When we speak about education for children with disabilities, we don't hear much about it. I didn't even know that it was very much in play, and I'm trying to sort of figure out how many students are involved. But why don't we hear much about it in the press, in the media?
You know, education is such a hot topic for every single family, for every single Malaysian. You hear a lot about education in this country.
You don't say.
It's another show.
It is.
But inclusive education, you know, it really touches those who are directly affected. Mm. So any family who has a child with a disability, they're going to be actively involved in this. They know a lot about inclusive education, not only in this country, but often in others, what's done elsewhere, what might be replicated. In a couple of days, we're at a conference in Ipoh. There will be close to 1,000 people there. There will be government people. There will be families. There will be civil society people. And lots of families with kids who are there on site. And there's this incredibly robust group who knows a lot about it. But if you're not directly affected, then you talk about all of the other education issues that... you're aware of.
And there are many.
But there are many, and we've done those shows time and time again. But why is it not sexy? It's not a problem that's unique to Malaysia.
Not at all. I guess there are priority issues on education in Malaysia, and this one quickly sort of gets bumped and bumped and bumped and bumped down the list for others that affect more children directly.
Right.
Now, I guess when we're speaking about this matter and the role of UNICEF, why this particular focus, amongst many others, but why this focus and what can UNICEF do and what has UNICEF been doing with regards to this issue?
Well, UNICEF has a proud tradition in Malaysia. This year we're celebrating 60 years of work in Malaysia. And with government counterparts, we've done a lot for kids. And certainly the government has done amazing things in terms of, you know, the primary fundamental issues, you know, things like child survival, things like maternal health. Those were the kinds of issues that we dealt with in the 70s and 80s. When you get to the sort of level of development that Malaysia's at in terms of an upper middle income country, you start shifting your attention from what services most children get, mm-hmm. to making sure that all children get those services. So we're going from services of most children on education to services including all children on education. And that's a shift that we made actively last year, and we're continuing to build on that.
When we were speaking earlier about the success rate of schools with inclusive education versus, I guess, special education schools, are there different types of successes that, you know, these different schools produce?
Well, again, I'd really focus on, if at the end of a year you have a child, you know, whether the child is disabled or not, with a quality education, then tick the box.
Right.
That's what we're looking for. In terms of inclusive education, the added element is that you're really bringing groups together, right? So you're not saying, well, you in that class, or you in that school, and you in this one. And it's the value of bringing those different groups together that is why globally this push on inclusive education is acknowledged and has proven itself.
What percentage of those boxes are ticked, looking at the current situation here in Malaysia?
How do you mean?
Well, you were talking about essentially the students with disabilities graduating at the end of the year, for example, you know, with a quality education, and so therefore those boxes are ticked. So what percentage would you say success rate here in Malaysia?
Well, percentage, I can't tell you, but I can give you an idea of, you know, in terms of the special education schools at primary level, there are 26 of those kinds of schools.
Right.
At secondary level, there are 5. In terms of special education that exists in a school but in separate classrooms, there are about 1,300 primary schools that offer that, mm-hmm. and about 670 secondary schools. And then inclusive education for children themselves, we're at the early edges of that. Interestingly enough, 2 years ago, the numbers of children with disabilities in mainstream schools was much higher. There were, it's actually gone down by about 1,000%.
1,000%?
1,000% in the last 2 years. Partly because children have been reoriented to the other two types of schools. And again, the Ministry of Education acknowledges these are their numbers, And they say, we've got to get better at making sure that mainstream classrooms and teachers are comfortable with this arrangement.
Right.
That's the work we're doing now.
Is eligibility an issue at all? The kind of students accepted and the types of disabilities and so on?
You get into degrees. You get into people who are totally functioning, intellectually functioning and can work in the classroom. They just need to be able to get into the classroom and figure out how to have access, if it's visual, and in that case, how to have access to the school books and all the rest. For those with intellectual disabilities, there you get into degrees of how extensive is the intellectual disability, and at one point does it really not make sense for that child to be in a mainstream classroom?
Right. Because I'm just thinking about how feasible it is, but I suppose the answer to that would be it's not an option. Feasibility?
I'm not sure.
If you're looking for inclusive education for every child,
right?
It's not an option whether or not it's feasible, whether or not the school can afford it.
Right. It's not going to be for absolutely every child. I think that that's a wonderland that we acknowledge. Mm. But I think that what we see is that there are a lot of people who, for reasons that are actually, the hurdles aren't that difficult to overcome. It's just
being committed.
It's just moving in that direction, and it's really going from the intellectual point of saying yes, we understand why there might be a win-win, and why if we want to work towards an inclusive society where all kinds of people belong, then we see how this is like the social lab to do it, right?
From your experience, is there a tipping point?
Well, if I go back to the example I gave earlier from Montenegro, it's seeing it happen. And there's nothing more powerful for a parent than having their child come to them and say, you know, I really learned something from that child that at the beginning of the year I didn't even want to sit next to.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And it's that shift that where in essence actually the kids are teaching the parents, because they are making the parents less scared around these kids as well.
I'm just wondering, outside of the classroom, what can Malaysians do to create more inclusive spaces for every child in Malaysia, especially for those with disabilities?
I really appreciate that question, because I think that really comes to the heart of a lot of the work that we've done. And we talk about our blind spot when it comes to children with disabilities, because it's us sort of seeing the disability first and kind of ignoring the child that's there. It's working at disabling our misconceptions so that we can enable these kids. So I met some great kids as we got active in a campaign last year. There was a 6-year-old, a little boy called Tang Heng. Fantastic kid, really, really dynamic. He would be a great interviewer on BFM. I'm telling you, he loves walking around with a microphone. He asks really good questions. Dynamic. He loves Barney, of course. And he's got Down syndrome. Now, that is one thing of his personality.
Mm-hmm.
But often, people only see the Down syndrome, right? Or I'll just give you another example. There was a boy called Iskander who's 12 years old, and he wants to be a chef. He's an aspiring chef. He's already a really good baker. I have the calories to prove it.
Whoa.
And and he's autistic. I mean, again, it's one thing of who that child is and what parents who have children with disabilities say is, you know, our kids don't even get a break because people only see that about them, and
you can't see beyond it to give them a chance.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So it's our blind spot.
Now, for listeners who want to find out more about inclusive education, UNICEF will be hosting a digital town hall tweet chat during the 5th National Early Childhood Intervention Conference, the NECIC, an acronym that I will now know,
nice.
Which will be focusing on inclusive education this weekend in Ipoh from the 4th to the 6th of June 2014. Can you tell us a little bit more about the conference?
Great. Well, the conference itself brings 1,000 people together. It's the fifth time that the NECIC does this. And every day is dedicated to a certain stream. So one day is policy, one day is lessons learned, one day is sort of international day where you learn from what other people have done. And on Thursday, from 6 to 7 p.m., we've got our tweet chat because while that's a lot of people in one place, what we want to do is take the conversation outside as well and get other people involved. Not everybody's going to be able to go there. There are people who are really interested in getting involved in this conversation that can't get there. So, and what we'd really like is to connect people who aren't as familiar with this topic and get them involved and get them asking questions and get them learning and interested. So that's what the tweet chat is about. And I'm going to take a moment to plug the hashtag. Hashtag edu, EDU, the number 4, all my. Edu, all 4, all my.
Now, what sort of topics can folks expect at that particular conference? I'm sure there's some pressing issues amongst many.
Well, some of the questions will be very similar to the ones that you've asked here. And certainly the push on inclusive education, the going from policy and, yes, it's a good idea, to how do you actually do this, will definitely be part of the agenda. How's it done in other places? What's the cost? What are the hurdles? How can we make sure that teachers are on board, and for the teachers who are already on board, how do we make sure that they have some of the training that they might need? So, you know, it goes from policy questions to sort of down in the weeds, the how-to questions, and lots of kids who are directly affected, who have opinions themselves on what they'd like to see.
Terrific. We've been speaking about inclusive education. With us is Ms. Wavina Belmonte, UNICEF representative from Malaysia. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you very much.
If you missed any portion of this interview, you can head to www.bfm.my to download the podcast. Stay tuned for more music. This is BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.